Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, good afternoon, brothers and sisters. Good afternoon. Welcome to another edition of TNJ Radio. I'm in the building with my main man, Jay Wells. How you doing, man? I'm in the building with Wells. How you doing, man?
I'm excellent, bro. How's your day going?
I'm doing wonderful, man. How you doing?
But I couldn't complain if I wanted. Good afternoon, kings and queens. I hope everyone's doing well.
Absolutely, absolutely. I didn't bring you in on the call, so I was talking, and then you weren't in on the call yet. So I was talking to Empty L on that one, but I'm glad I got you in on that. We're back in the building for another wonderful show. We really want to thank everybody for tuning in. We really appreciate the support for, you know, the show, for the positive things that we're trying to do here. And once again, we want to keep it moving. We have a wonderful show on deck for you today, tremendous topic, we believe, and it's something that we've been wanting to talk about for some time, and we finally got a chance to get around to it. There were some things going on in the news, but we decided to skip on that stuff because there's been a lot already said about it. So we figured, you know, we'll let everybody else talk about that, and we'll talk about other things that we feel are more pertinent at this exact moment in time, because, quite frankly, you can get burnt out talking about the same thing all the time. So this is a somewhat fun topic, but also serious in my personal opinion, and I think my brother Wells feels the same about it. Today, our topic is Music Makes Me High, and the reason we really wanted to bring this to the forefront is because in the black culture, music is extremely important. Music is almost our everything. It makes us feel good. It makes us feel bad. It makes you excited when you're about to go out and get it in. It makes you feel good when you're at work and just powering through whatever it is that you have to do. Whatever mood you're in, there's music that matches that mood, and you set yourself up accordingly based upon how you're feeling. And one of the reasons we wanted to talk about this is because hip-hop and R&B in particular are black forms of music. And over the years, things have changed drastically in terms of the nature that is delivered, who's delivering it, and more importantly, the message that's delivered. And that's really what we want to talk about today, the message, what the message means to us, what the message means when you receive it, and more importantly, when you receive it, what does it actually do and what does it actually not do for individuals, young people in particular, but adults as well, because adults aren't immune to falling victim to, you know, subliminal messages that are in music and almost internalizing unrealistic expectations that musicians are putting out these days. And you can trace our history of music back to slavery days and prior to that when we used music as a way to make ourselves happy when we were being oppressed. You know, we use songs as freedom songs when we were trying to escape. We had coded ways of getting ourselves off plantations and things of that nature. Then you move forward to the blues and, you know, the Harlem Renaissance when music was really popping and really positive and black people were establishing ourselves as the go-to people when it came to this art form. And then you fast forward to, you know, the 70s and the upbeat type of, you know, not techno, but that really disco type sound that we helped originate. And now you move forward to hip hop and R&B back when it was the Isley Brothers type of music versus, you know, right now where you have, you know, cats making all type of music that is really what I would deem detrimental to our culture. You know, there's this song out right now called White Iverson, which I can't front. I mean, I mess with the rapping stuff when I need to mess with it. Like, I'm not going to sit here and act like I don't. But these songs aren't sending out positive messages. And so what we want to talk about today is, what does that really mean? Does it affect us? Does it really have no bearings on us at all? Is it just all in our heads in terms of us just tripping, saying, look, you know, the music is affecting our kids. It's making them want things that they shouldn't want. It's making them do things that they shouldn't do subliminally, that they're internalizing unbeknownst to them. And with that being said, we can go ahead and jump right into this, my brother. Wells, when you think about what's going on right now, what do you feel is the current state of hip-hop and R&B music from a flat-out perspective of its influence, whether that be positive or negative? What would you say the current state of hip-hop and R&B music is from your personal view?
I mean, personally, it's probably one of the most influential things within our culture. It's like when you think about our culture and what and things that come from it, you think about the hip-hop fluids in our everyday activity, from the way we dress, from the way we walk, the way we talk. I would say it's probably the number one trendsetter in our within our culture, and that's on every level. And one of the things that I always try to keep in mind is that it's really hard to talk about whether or not it's hurting or helping our culture. I always try not to look at it that way, but I always want to talk about its influence. Because at the end of the day, as we receive messages, as we pay attention to these things, we always know what's right and what's wrong. We always know what parts of music are real and what parts are what's fake. But, again, depending on the person and depending on their upbringing, people will start to believe anything. You know what I'm saying? And that's where it always gets kind of like that gray area as far as, like, hip-hop's positive or negative influence. But it's definitely a major part of our culture. There's no hiding that. Like, you think about the moods that music can put you in. It's like, I mean, let's think about it on a day-to-day basis, man. Driving to work, when you need something to help you get through this drive, to power through this drive, you know what to fire up. And it was kind of funny, man, just this afternoon. I live in probably one of the most overpopulated areas in the country. I live in the D.C. area, so I'm on 495. And I don't know why, I don't know how, an old Project Pat song came in my head. I don't know where this came from. I have no clue where this reached from. And all I kept thinking about were the lyrics of this song. And it was just like, geez, I can't believe I listened to that as a kid. But when I say from the language, the way it talked about where it degraded women, you kind of ignored that because no matter what he was saying, all you thought about was the beat, the rhythm of that song, and what the rhythm of that song did, it picked you up. It was a really, like, upbeat song and kind of got you in, like, a hype, a turn-up kind of mood. And with that, for me, I'm able to look past the lyrics or whatever he's saying and to get excited about how the music makes me feel as far as, like, with the beat. But then I can turn around and listen to Common, and I can listen to Finding Forever, and you can find the messages within that, and not necessarily the rhythm, the beat of the song. You listen to the words of the songs and how those songs make you feel. So it's like you think about different things, man, and the different types of hip hop and the different types of R&B and the way you relate to it. It's a completely different vibe, and I think for each person and every person, every listener, they have their own vibe that they get from music. And I think everyone kind of relates to that. And again, even with R&B, I mean, you listen to an Erykah Badu album, you fall in love with the rhythm and the tone, and you can kind of zen out. And you listen to a song like Didn't You Know, you're in a very zen place. You're chilling. You're in a very relaxed place. But then at the same time, you can hear like some R. Kelly or something, and you'll get a completely different vibe. That doesn't make the music any better or worse, but the vibe and the feeling that you get from it. And that's kind of like when you take into consideration the state of hip-hop, the state of hip-hop and R&B, it's hard to kind of to deny the influence. The influence is there. And so that's something you can never really kind of try to minimize. but it's all, I think for me and me personally, it's all about like representing and finding that balance of what it is and what it's not. And I think that's something where generationally younger people haven't been able to kind of identify with. It's like they fall in love into like the turn up era. You know what I'm saying? It's like, that's all they can really listen to. They listen to a lot of things that like create images that make people feel like it's life, when in actuality, like in our age range, people were kind of able to kind of take stuff for what it was. Like Jay-Z would say something cool, but you knew Jay-Z wasn't really doing that. You know, you understood. You kind of understood that. It's kind of hard to kind of determine where that transition came from. Like, and Trav, a question for you, brother. Have you ever got to the point where it was just hard to identify what was real and what was not from a song?
That's a good question. I would say yes and no. Well, first of all, I would say yes. I would say when I was younger, absolutely. But it was more so, well, let me frame it like this. Let me start over with that. Let me frame it like this. I would say it's that unrealistic expectations for what I could achieve at that point in my life. So, for example, when I was, 18, 19, 20, 21, and then Jay-Z is, or insert X rapper, because everybody was doing it, when they would say, I'm in that Maybach or I'm in that Bentley and, I got this iceberg on or whatever the case may be, Now, you know what I'm saying? I'm an older cat, so that was like my youth. They were talking about iceberg, they were talking about that type of stuff when it was really, when it had the ability to influence me. And I went out and bought iceberg. You see what I'm saying? I went out and I was like, man, I wish I was rolling in a Bentley or whatever the car was at that point in time. I can't even remember. It was so long ago. But at that point in time, absolutely, because it made me feel like if I didn't have that, I wasn't sufficient. My life wasn't sufficient. I wasn't achieving in life. That's what it did for me. So subconsciously, it made me feel as though I needed to go out and get those things to feel better about myself. But fast forward, which is really important to understand, I'm 34 years old, and now I'm really fortunate that I'm in a position to where, obviously, I can't buy a Bentley or now, they talk about, Lord knows what, Phantoms and the list can go on and on, but like, I can't go out and buy a Phantom, but I could go out and buy a Benz if I wanted to, or something that in that ballpark that would make it look like I was really doing my thing. But now I have no desire to do that because I'm comfortable in my own skin and comfortable with who I am. So I don't feel like I need that in order to be sufficient, to be fulfilled, to be accepted, to have people see me and say, you know what, he made it in life. He's somebody. And I think that's the main difference that I noticed, whereas in my youth, I needed, that music made me feel like I needed those things to be a man, to impress women, to have status in a capitalist society. But now I'm just not in that place anymore because I understand fully that material things don't make you anything better than who you already are. And having been fortunate enough to acquire some material things over the course of my life, it's become even more obvious because TNJ Radio, Solution-Based Radio, y'all know we shoot you straight. And when I acquire material things, it didn't make me feel better about me. It didn't make me feel any better. I was just in a nice car. I just had nice clothing, but it didn't make me feel like my life was on a higher plane. And so that's kind of where I come out on that, if you can understand where I'm coming from.
Yeah, no doubt. I definitely feel you, because it creates, like we always talk about it, man, like the fake facade, that fake air of confidence that people have. People, they acquire things, they buy, like the Jays phenomenon, the Air Force Ones phenomenon. You know what promoted Air Force Ones and Jays? Hip-hop.
Right.
Those are the number one avenues. Michael Jordan talk about all he wants, but it wasn't Jordan winning promoting Jays. It was hip-hop. I could think of a million songs. I could think at least seven songs off the top of my head with people talking about Jays. One of Nelly's biggest hits, Air Force Ones. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like those kind of things were sprinkled around us all the time, and it kind of created situations where people thought, oh, if I get those, I'm getting that chick. I can pull this girl. Or if I get this, it's kind of like it helps embody that false sense of wealth. You know what I mean? And it's like that's one of the things that kind of cripples us to a certain extent. But at the same time, for a lot of people, they need those things to feel a little sense of confidence. When you're dealing with people who genuinely don't have anything, anything that makes them feel better about themselves will do just that. And people kind of take the wins where they can get them. They appreciate the small wins. And that's where it kind of goes into something as far as, like, whose responsibility is it to police the music? Or is it protected, like, by under the art moniker kind of thing? And I believe we've talked about this before, Trav, but there was this meeting. African Bambaataa, who's one of the innovators and the major architects in hip-hop, always talks about this meeting that took place in the 90s where music execs, and keep in mind, music execs are pretty much, hip-hop is run by a bunch of old Jewish men. Those are the major label owners. Those are the people behind Columbia, Jive, all these major, Universal, all these major hip-hop distributors. And they kind of decided to, this was like a meeting, it was like in the L.A. outskirts. They decided they wanted to get behind gangster rap. And keep in mind, the late 80s, early 90s, this is when you have a young LL coming out. You got Public Enemy kicking their message. You got guys like Special K, Dougie Fresh, the guys that were kind of kicking more fun hip-hop. You had guys that did a little bit of gangster music. Well, not necessarily gangster music, but you think about Kool Moe Dee. They were giving out bars more than anything else. People talk about Rakim. Rakim never dropped a curse word, N-word, in a song. You know what I mean? And
right.
That was the environment that we had. But then all of a sudden this meeting takes place and the shift turns into, hey, we're going to put the wheels behind gangsta rap. And keep in mind, this is cracks hitting. All these things are being planted into our community. So we get into an environment where culture, we're going to glorify music that promotes gangster rap, gangster violence, gang culture, and you hit N.W.A. People talk about the positives of N.W.A., but personally, I didn't really see it, but I'll take people's word for it. Like, I honestly feel like it promoted a lot more negativity than positivity.
Yeah, and just to kind of jump back a little bit, because it's the same for our sisters, too, because women, black women in particular, fall into the same trap of the subconscious effect of this music on us, because we do things to impress them based on what we hear and the messages that we get from music, and then they do things to impress us, and then we're both kind of like with this internal struggle trying to impress each other. And then we're ultimately creating a cycle where we're creating, becoming people that we don't want to date. Like, I don't want to date a woman that is infatuated with red bottoms. You feel what I'm saying? If red bottoms is your thing and that's what I need to buy you in order to be with you, I have no interest in you because that's not where my interests lie. So it's this thing where, like, all right, the brothers want to go out and get these cars and, you know, some jewelry or whatever, and then the women, like, all right, well, I need to wear this waist trimmer because that's what they talk about in the music now, and you know, I wanna get these red bottoms and, you know, what have you. And then both parties are kind of doing both of these things to try and impress each other. But hip hop is the most influential music on the planet, without a question. But we aren't the most, we don't sell the most. And that's the thing that I find most fascinating. So in the year 2014, I just want to run this down real quick because I think it's really pertinent to the conversation. The top 10 selling artists of 2014, number 10, Fleetwood Mac, number 9, Pink, number 8, Luke Bryan, number 7, Maroon 5, 6, Beyonce, 5, The Rolling Stones, number 4, Bon Jovi, number 3, Justin Timberlake, number 2, Kenny Chesney, number 1, Taylor Swift. So one black person in that whole mix, yet our music is still the most influential out there, but we aren't capitalizing off of it financially, but other companies are capitalizing off of us with the clothing, with the jewelry, with the vehicle sales. And so all of this is subconsciously in our minds, but we aren't capitalizing off of it because our artists aren't making $40 million a year off the music like Taylor Swift did, $32 million like Kenny Chesney did. And I think that's something that we really need to understand. See, we're buying into these images and we're feeding the beast that is going ultimately to another system that doesn't care about us, which I find to be really interesting. In terms of it being art, I think that's really subjective because art is in the eye of the beholder. You can look at a painting and say, like, I love Basquiat, but a lot of people think Basquiat stuff is weird and ugly and spooky, but it's all in the eye of the beholder. And I think that when you harm people, and I think hip-hop at this point is harming more than it's hurting, but I don't blame the artist. I blame the system, because when you come from communities where there's no financial resources and they say, well, talk about this and you'll get paid, then it becomes art and they sell it. And so they're preying on your poverty and your lack of resources financially, and then labeling it as art, but it's really hurting us. And I think that's, you know, I would say that's where I come out on that. What say you, Wells?
I can definitely piggyback that, man, because when you're dealing with the depressed people and they find a means that'll get them something, they find any opportunity to do better than what they're doing, they're going to jump on that. And people take this image like, yo, I can go here, I can go degrade my culture, I can sell myself out a little bit, but you know what? My mom isn't on the corner anymore. You know what I'm saying? People are going to jump on that opportunity. And that's something that we have to be cognizant of as well. It's like, we can't just go out just blasting hip-hop artists like, yo, these guys are just awful, they're doing this, they're doing that. But a lot of them, they're doing it just to survive. And the other end of that, the other problem with that is, we talk about the culture vultures. The culture vultures are taking full advantage of us. And that's why, again, people kind of mock them, they tease them. But Dame Dash makes the best point ever, man. We don't own anything in hip-hop. And he's one of the few people that are strong enough and willing to put their own money behind themselves. So it's like we got to be stronger than that. We have to learn how to empower each other to be independent. And the reason so many artists are afraid to be independent is because they feel like they can't count on our support. So if we're going to be fans of the music, fans of the culture, we have to support the people and the artists that are going to give us the music that we desire and support them in a way that they can create good music so that we're going to consume. Does that make sense?
Absolutely, man. This show just absolutely flew by. Got to jump into these solutions. My solution for this is fairly straightforward. It's not a solution, but it's more of a way to kind of curb it a little. I think that when you have young brothers and sisters and you have an opportunity to share information with them, I think you have to do it. I think what we don't do very well is share information in buckets, you know, drops, just drops, little drops in the bucket saying, all right, you know that song is dope, like, Trap Queen is my ish right now. I can't front. But, like, hey, bro, hey, that joint go hard right now. But you still have to tell, you know, the youth that's listening to it, like, that's not a good message. That's not reality. You know, you don't really want, you're a woman or you don't want to be in that situation. That's not the way to do it. And we have to start with the young people because you and I can discern the difference between, like, listening to Trap Queen and getting hype versus the young people listening to Trap Queen and then actually trying to get a sister to put some weight in her car and move it across state lines. So invest in the youth when you had an opportunity to tell them that that's not the way that it should be. What you got, Jay?
And I'm going to keep it simple, man. Like KRS-One, man, he always talks about how hip hop has the influence to hurt our culture, it also has the power to uplift them. And I truly agree with that. It's up to us to empower artists and work with and try to support artists that are really putting out good messages. Because the thing that happens is guys try to put out a good message. Like a perfect example, Trav, what's your man out of Atlanta's name, dude?
Sahi the Prince
gives all bars, nothing but message, but he gets missed out on. He gets slept on. And no knocking Big Sean, but Big Sean gets more love over a more talented MC that's actually a better spitter and gives out more of a message. We got to support the guys that put out real music, and we got to go out of our way to get them spins on the radio because the radio is only going to promote and spin records that people are calling in a request. They do that. That's exactly what happens. But we got to go out and support real artists, and we got to support good music. But other than that, man, that's all I got for this.
Yeah, I agree 100%, man. That's a great way to close it out. We appreciate y'all tuning in. Hopefully that was a great show for you and you felt it. Music is powerful and influential. We got to use it the right way. TNJ Radio, solution-based radio, and as you know, God is love.